Welcome to Accept Your Gifts, the 22-minute podcast for inspiring your most creative life. My name is Tracy Crow. I'm an author, writing coach, and Marine Corps veteran. I'm looking forward to co-creating today's show with you. So if you're ready, are you ready? I'm ready. So if you're ready to live a more creative, more magical life, let's get started. Special guest today is Norris Comer from Portland, Oregon. Norris is the managing editor of Northwest Yachting Magazine. But I first met Norris a few years ago during his senior year at Eckerd College in St. Petersburg, Florida. For Eckerd, I was serving as the faculty advisor to the college newspaper, so I was always in recruiter mode for the most talented ethical students with diverse backgrounds and academic majors who could contribute something different to our college newspaper experience. Enter Norris, a marine science major with an equal passion for storytelling. Let's just say Norris had me at hello, and I'll just let him tell you the rest of the story.
I've already told our listeners a little bit about your background, okay? A little. Everybody, just go visit Norris's LinkedIn page because that does this way more justice than what I could ever do in a short intro. But I've already told them that we met at Eckerd College in St. Petersburg, Florida. But I'm curious, and I know you don't know what question I'm going to ask you. So here it comes. Do you remember our first meeting?
I think I remember it well. I'm pretty sure our first meeting was at an event where the students drink with the professors, a pretty bold move by the college, called Pitchers with Professors. And I don't even know what the icebreaker was, but before we knew it, we were drinking together and you were inviting me to write for the Current, which is the Eckerd College newspaper. For students, and I was like, sure, why not? I was kind of a marine science major, kind of hungry to get in the writing game, and that was my first gig, thanks to you.
Well, the reason I guess we should maybe clarify so that our listeners don't suddenly believe that our Pitchers with Professors events at Eckerd College are like these drunken free-for-alls, because they're far from that, right? But it is kind of based on the Socratic method of professors really sitting down outside of the classroom with their students in a very casual setting. And of course, it's all monitored, you know, with wristbands and who's eligible to drink and old enough and all of that sort of stuff. But we call it Pitchers with Professors. But I wondered if you had remembered that, because I remember it so fondly. The fact that you stood out with this such an incredible passion for wanting to write. And here you were talking to me about writing, and yet you were majoring in one of the sciences there. We'll get into that in a minute at the college. And I thought, oh my gosh, we need to have a science writer on our college newspaper. And you brought such a difference to the paper. You were able to bring about science in a way and introduce various concepts in such a creative way that I've never seen done before. Where did that come from?
Flattered. I think, you know, that was one of the great things about Eckerd College, was kind of having that, let's have a beer and talk about ideas, get the creative juices flowing. And I think a lot of it was thanks to the platform. I got to be able to be creative and be supportive. The column, the science column, was called Drunk on Science, Learn Responsibly. So there's probably some pictures.
I'm detecting a theme here. Please, listeners, it's not about that.
We're scholars here, you know, but yeah, so I think it was just about making it approachable, making it fun. Most of the column started out with some interesting talk I was having with some expert at something. But yeah, it was just an opportunity for me to explore. And I think having that relationship with the paper that was willing to take a chance and something a little more experimental was huge. And I think that's a big part of it.
Yeah, because our paths, if I remember correctly, they did not cross until your senior year, right? And so you had not had time to factor in any sort of journalism classes with me or anything along those lines. And yet we were all stunned. I mean, you just fell right into it and just had the knack to do it.
Thank you. I don't want anyone to think there's not a big learning process either. So I definitely appreciated the editorial staff giving me feedback. You know, workshopping with you. I was fortunate enough to go to a writer's conference, the Eckerd College Writers Conference. Writers in Paradise is phenomenal. Definitely recommend that. Made me a better writer. But yeah, I think combining that sort of natural knack and kind of proclivity to want to do something with having a good support structure and a community is just huge. That's kind of what I do now with the boating sphere with the magazine, and it's what I did back then as well.
Well, Norris, one of the reasons I wanted to have you on our show is because I've been trying to share this message about the power of living a more creative life. And that can look like a lot of things and in a lot of ways, right? And one of the reasons I wanted you specifically to be on this podcast and for our listeners to hear you is because we don't often think, most of us, I guess, about science necessarily being, let's just say, creative. And you have found a way to blend your love and passion for science and your love and passion for writing. Talk a little bit about that, and how do you do this? And what is it the rest of us are missing? Are we so biased or stereotyped on what we think science is?
Yeah. I think that old adage, write what you know, is always true. So everything needs a storyteller to accompany it. In my humble opinion, I'm just 29, but this is my experience, limited as it is. So whether it's science or boats with the magazine, or I get to write about science these days with the boating magazine as well. There's a place for story everywhere. Like, just look at fiction as a genre. Every type of character you could imagine, from like a chimney sweep or to a, you know, a president, is in there. So there's an outlet for story in all walks of life, I think, anyway. I was reading an article today, a New York maid wrote a best-selling memoir about it.
Yes, yes.
You know?
Yeah.
So there's a story for everything. I think what happens in science, you're trained as a scientist to not be a storyteller. I think that's one tricky thing about science and why there's this huge disconnect between science and what people talk about in their homes. Because scientists, you get the storyteller kind of beaten out of you, and that's kind of by necessary. You have to be a numbers person. You know, scientific writing is hyper-technical, you know, very inapproachable, but it needs to be that way in order to convey the data. And that's just, you know, how you advance scientific stuff. But you are losing a lot when it comes to story. So it is, I think, going to be an emerging thing. This is just me shooting from the hip here, trying to play fortune teller a little bit. I think there will be just a science communication niche in the world. You know, it's been blazed by like Bill Nye, the Science Guy, Neil deGrasse Tyson, you know, these sort of more people who realize there is an outlet for someone who can tell the story. You don't need to have the same guy producing the data be the same person telling the story. So,
you probably don't often find that person one and the same, do you?
I think it's very rare. You know, you think of like Carl Sagan could pull that off.
And Norris Comer. Norris Comer.
Hey, you said it, not me, but I definitely enjoy it. There's definitely stories to tell, and it goes beyond the realm of just purely scientific, but that takes a stretch of the imagination, which science in its purest form doesn't allow for. That doesn't mean we can't give it a shot. And I think more people will be successful as the years goes on and as science becomes more important in our everyday lives.
So if you are looking at a lot of data and you want to form something creative in order to express some sense of deeper meaning for the layperson out there on the street, what would you be looking for in particular? I mean, where does someone start with that to convey some form of story?
Yeah, I think you do have to be well-versed in the topic. I think that is an important thing. But I also think you have to be in touch with how does that data make you feel?
Ooh, yeah.
And it sounds a little kind of wishy-washy and hippy-dippy, but like the first guy, I forget his name, I think he was a Scotsman who figured out geologic time. You know, this is a couple hundred years ago. He's walking the highlands and he figured out that it takes thousands of millions of years to create the rocks he's seeing, which goes directly against the Bible, for example, which was what people thought that was that geologic time scale. And he was euphoric about that. He's like, you know, it's like, wow, there's like a whole philosophical thing being introduced here. So I think if you want to tell the story, you got to look at that data and it tells you, it makes you feel something. And then you kind of capitalize on how that makes you feel to make it a message that everyone can kind of get into.
Right. Okay. So I think I'm starting to understand this better. So bringing it into that feeling, it's almost like you have to find a way to, it seems like, almost make the reader feel as if he or she needs to know this information and why it's important, right? There's some sort of need or desire, which goes back to when we're writing fiction. What does the protagonist want, need, or desire, right? Does that make
sense?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think you nailed it. I also think one thing that writers of all stripes have to do is be entertaining. You know, at the end of the day, the reader has to be sucked in. And that's where storytelling's fun, because science in its purest form doesn't care at all about being entertaining. Whereas the storyteller, it's like, let's make this a fun story, whether it opens up with me drinking and saying something ridiculous for the column that leads into something more profound, or, you know, something to sort of tease out something honestly can be funny or entertaining.
Okay. Oh, that's great. Hey, I want to bring up something. I jokingly said that I had read your LinkedIn page and everybody should go to it because it's so you that I just busted a gut laughing as I was reading through your summary. But it toward the end of your summary, you had kind of a profound statement. You say, "I think Forrest Gump is a great role model." Elaborate on that. What do you mean?
So I've always gotten a kick out of that sense of serendipity. I have both accidentally and on purpose tried to be kind of witness to these big things that have happened. Like I saw Barack Obama get inaugurated for the first time. When I was a fisherman in Alaska, they were handing down the Exxon Valdez oil spill decision from the Supreme Court. Angry fishermen everywhere. They didn't get any money. You know, things like that. I occupied Wall Street. You can end up there on accident or try to get there kind of on purpose, but it's really cool to be part of the world you're in. And Forrest Gump just is the classic example of a guy who's just the man of his time, with him completely on accident. But he's also very receptive to what's going on. He's not projecting his or dominating or, you know, projecting his will on the world. He's kind of letting it happen. And in good faith and good humor, taking it on. I think that's why I like him so much.
Yeah. Wow, that's profound. You were even on a Norwegian reality show?
Yes. That was super random as well. The show is called Alt Fenud, yeah? And it's okay, Norway's number
one. Say that one more time.
Alt Fenud, yeah?
Okay.
And it's the national motto. It means all for Norway.
Oh.
But they take it's number one. It's the number one show in Norway. They're actually filming the 10th season this summer. But they take 12 Americans of Norwegian descent who've never been to Norway before, and they pit them in these like cultural elimination challenges for the top prize, where you meet your surviving relatives who you've been estranged with for hundreds of years, maybe, you know.
Oh my goodness.
And it's one of a kind program. You kind of feel like you went through the closet in Narnia because everyone's like excited to see you. Oh, welcome to the kingdom. And you get like the royal tour. And you see, you know, every week is a different episode and you're in different country, different parts of the country. It was a really profound experience. And on a personal level, it's kind of like you meet someone who's gone to Israel and talks about birthright and how important that is for them. It's kind of cool to get that experience as well, kind of going back to a motherland and kind of trying to learn more about yourself.
Well, what was it like to meet relatives?
I didn't win, so I didn't get to meet them.
Oh, you didn't get to, okay.
They give us our contact info, but I haven't gotten to go back and visit yet. It is pretty touching, though. They bring everyone to a farm that their family at least used to live on. Mm-hmm. So they actually take you there. You get the tour of this old farm that like your ancestors lived on, and they give you like a letter, and it's just this tear jerking personal stuff. And everyone cries. They zoom in with the cameras and everyone feels, you know, hip hip hurrah for Norway. But yeah, I learned a lot about my family and Norway and who I am as a person. A lot of seafaring folk, which I thought was appropriate.
When you brought up that letter and how much emotion, then it reminds me again about storytelling, you know, and that
definitely,
you know, we don't realize it. I don't care who we are in this world. It seems that we can't help but find a story around everything. I mean, we can't even go drive to work without there being some sense of a story, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
And definitely. I definitely agree with you. I mean, it's such an ancient thing. You see those cave paintings and the, you know, thousands of years ago, those are stories being told back then, you know, totally. I think it's super important.
Well, of all the travels you've done, and in addition to having experienced that reality show in Norway, you've also ridden a train, I believe, from Russia to Mongolia, and you've done all these different things. I'm curious, what universal themes or maybe threads would you say you've noticed that have kind of run through all of these experiences and cultures maybe?
I hope you tell me.
I haven't done all that.
I think it stems from a deep curiosity. I tell my friends, I'll either be an old man or I'll die doing something stupid. And so there's just this desire to see, you know, what's over there. You know, I've always kind of been like that. The train trip that you talked about over Russia, I took a gap year before college, and I opened it up by being a greenhorn on a commercial fishing vessel in Alaska. That was a crazy experience, made enough money. And then I spent it all going around the world, including the train across Russia. And I think it just stems from a deep curiosity. I think that storyteller in you craves that kind of stuff as well, because you need good fodder to tell story, and it kind of is like sustenance a little bit. But I'm still figuring it out. All I know is I'm like this, and I'm not complaining.
Where does this sense of adventure come from? I mean, are your parents this way? I mean, where does this come from? Where are you drawing from?
I do blame my folks a little bit. They are very nice, salt of the earth Minnesotans, but they were the weirdos who left Minnesota to go west. And they met actually in Fiji with this student program through the University of Minnesota back in the day. And my dad, like, was this navigator on an old schooner sailboat. And my mom was like studying fiddler crabs at the beach.
I love it.
Marine science-y. So, you know, they were kind of the oddball Minnesotans, kind of black sheeps who like to go do things and see the world. And my mom's a doctor. She was just inducted into the Royal College of Physicians in the United Kingdom a couple months ago. There's only a handful of Americans who've done that.
Oh my goodness.
So I do blame my folks. It started with the folks for sure.
Well, how do they feel about all your travels?
You know, I'm super blessed. They have been nothing but supportive. Even when I was like jumping on a train in Russia alone when I was 19, I was like, I remember this actually very well. I was talking to my dad. It was, you know, February in Siberia. I was like, I don't know if I should go to Siberia in February. And he was like, when else would you go to Siberia? When it was nice? Like, that's the Siberian experience. Yeah, it's a Siberian experience, you know? So definitely blame the folks for their supportive and adventurous style.
You know, I had the pleasure, the honor of reading your memoir about your Alaskan fishing experience, what, about a year now? Mm. And, you know, it was full of these pivotal moments. And of course, when we're writing, we're talking about finding the pivotal moments and creating the stories and then linking them together, things like that. But I'm curious, overall, a lot of our life's pivotal moments are filled with joy and some are not so. Some are filled with sorrow. If I just said, okay, you are locked in this room and you can't come out until you name the most pivotal, life-changing moment of your 29 years, what would that be?
That's a great question. I have to say, you know, I'll
balance it out. You should have taken my journalism class.
I should have. Man, I think you're onto something. I think the most pivotal ones are usually failures, and you could call them failures, misfortunes, or whatever, what have you. I'd say we almost lost my dad when I was shortly out of college. He had a problem with his lung and heart. We actually had to take him via wheelchair and train down to San Diego to get surgery, and we thought he was toast. And just that whole journey, I had to drop whatever I was doing for a month or two just to help out the family. But through that stuff, you learn a lot more about your life and the world and your place in it. I remember I've been working on my salmon fishing story for about 10 years now. and he was going to go into surgery. I spent the night in his hospital bed. He's been working on a Civil War book his whole life. So I had his manuscript. My mom was working on a medical textbook. I had her manuscript. And then I had my manuscript several drafts ago, all right there. And I was just reading them, you know, wasn't sure if he was going to come out or not of the surgery. So I think that was a pretty pivotal moment. And through it, I think writing just emerged as the necessary thing, you know, at, there will be some form of storytelling and writing no matter what comes up next.
Okay, thanks for sharing that. And your dad's okay now?
He's doing great, yeah. It was pretty scary there, but yeah, we're all little sisters in college now and we're a happy unit now, so.
I wonder, what writers do you really admire? Do you have a favorite go-to?
Oh man, I have so many that I just love. Of course, it goes without saying reading's very important. I love Farley Moat. He's a Canadian guy. The Boat Who Wouldn't Float is one of my favorite books, partly because I bought a beat-up old sailboat in Florida during college and was trying to live on it.
I remember.
And Farley Moat basically did the same thing, but a way cooler version in Newfoundland. And that book is just amazing. I've gotten to John McPhee lately.
Yeah.
Looking for a Ship. I believe it's called, I just finished, is super good and up my alley. I am reading, I get to sound super smart now. I'm reading Dostoevsky's The Brothers Karamazov. I have it right here.
Right.
That one's a bit thick. I don't know. That one's a beast, but I just consume it all. Even if I don't finish every book I start, all genres, you know, all authors, you can't get enough. But those are some names that I'm thinking that pop off my head right now.
Well, one of the things that I admired so much about Eckerd College, of which, by the way, I am an alum too. I don't know if you knew that or not, but
you know,
this whole liberal arts education and about how interlinked, you know, the study of liberal arts is and what we can learn and how it can sharpen our critical thinking skills, so much so that I based a show on how the creative arts, for example, can actually sharpen one's critical thinking skills. Can you comment about that in terms of your overall educational, experience with that?
Yeah, I totally agree. I view myself as a liberal arts student, whether or not I'm in the classroom. Just that idea of you're taking a chemistry class this period and then an art sculpture class the next one, and then like a international politics class the next. Trying to see everything in its totality. I'm all about that. And I think a storyteller has to be all about that too, because you're not a specialist as a storyteller. You're kind of the ultimate generalist. You have to kind of know everything to pull it all together.
Let me jump in. Besides that informing you as a storyteller, how can seeing things like that in that realm help in the everyday?
That's a great question. I'm a huge advocate of that, just because the world makes a lot more sense the more you know. If you want to live in a small bubble and only see things one way, the world's a terrifying place. Like, things happen, you can just kind of shrug it off and say that's how it works, etc. But if you kind of approach it from that liberal arts mindset, there's cause and effect to a lot of things, and the world becomes clearer. It's more complex, but something you can actually understand better. That's what I enjoy out of it anyway.
Ah, I hear you. Okay, I love that. Okay, I'm going to go way out on a limb here. In a sense, I'm going to say, we're going to go back to the future. Remember when you said a moment or two ago that you're either going to die an old man or die doing something stupid? Okay, let's say, thank goodness, you make it and you're almost 80. You with me?
Okay. I'm with you.
You're approaching 80. What do you imagine, knowing what you know now, what do you imagine your 80-year-old Norris Comer self would say to the 29 Norris Comer?
Ah, interesting. Well, if I do become an old man, the dream is to be kind of an old wizardly helpful guy who helps the young, you know, like an old Gandalf wizard type. I probably wouldn't reveal my identity and just kind of sneak myself in there.
I like that approach.
And try to give cryptic advice, maybe send him on a treasure hunt, you know, something he'd be responsive to.
Ooh, clever.
But to be honest, I think I'm a big fan of things happening as they should, in a sense. You know, if you succeed, it's thanks to your cunning, your skill, your strength, etc. If you fail, it's an opportunity to learn. So I wouldn't want younger Norris to get out of trouble. I'd probably encourage him to get into more trouble. I'd probably make young Norris's life really difficult, actually. I'd be like, oh yeah, you should totally go out with her. Bad idea, but you learn a lot. Or, you know, you should probably take that job. Oh, bad idea, but you learned a lot. So, you know, I'd probably make young Norris's life a lot more difficult. But it'd be
good
for me.
I don't think I know many 29-year-olds who would ever go for that. So I so respect and admire that answer. That's wonderful. All right, I'm going to throw one more at you. All right, you're getting ready to set sail on a new adventure, which for you could probably be tomorrow morning at sunrise. Besides the obvious needs for rations or other supplies, what three items would you ensure you set out with?
Aha. Another good unorthodox question.
You should have taken my journalism.
I should have. What was I thinking? Too much science. So one item I would definitely take, and I actually have it above me right now. When I was young, I went to New Zealand, and a Maori guy gave me a taiaha.
What is that?
It's this traditional spear with like a face, and the spear points, this tongue sticking out. And it was a really cool moment as a kid to get one of those. It's a sign of respect. I was just curious about his culture and spent the day with him, and he gave me it. And that's gone on boats with me before. It's supposed to be a good omen and the ancestor power and stuff. So definitely would take the Taiha just in case. I'm sipping whiskey right now. Would need a little whiskey.
Okay.
And I'd probably have to take this Brothers Karamazov to finish it because there's still about 1,000 pages to go.
And you can reread.
Exactly. I know. Yeah. Write a dissertation about it. All that good stuff.
Oh, good luck with that. Enjoy. I've been through that once. That once was enough. Norris, last thing, I promise. When you think about what I'm trying to do here with encouraging folks to think about ways of living their most creative life, what does that even mean to you?
Another good question. Living your most creative life. There's probably a lot of ways to interpret that. The way I kind of think of it as I chew it over now, I think it has a lot to do with kind of manifesting the life that you want to lead. The word creative sort of implies novel or something that's unique to an individual. So I would think that a creative life would be one that is uniquely the person in questions, one that satisfies them, one that fulfills them, and in turn, that has a nice habit of making the world a better place. So that's probably what comes to my mind when I think of a most creative life.
Well, you said that was a good question, but that's one of the best answers I've ever heard. Thank you.
The whiskey talks. It's just like old times.
Okay. Here we are, back to drinking again.
There we go.
No, Norris, thank you so much for being with us today. And it's just been so much fun to reconnect with you again after several years. So happy sailing, my friend. Take care.
Thank you, Tracy. And thanks for all that you do. It's important to have community builders like you getting the word out, building people up. You're one of my first writing mentors, and it's such an honor to be here.
Yeah, it's my honor, honey. All right, thanks so much. We'll see you soon.
I hope you enjoyed today's co-creative listening experience. Please remember to leave a comment about the single greatest takeaway for you today. You know, that one thing you will remember from this day forward. Was it something funny or provocative? Was it just what you needed to hear? Please share so we can all benefit. And remember to return Tuesdays and Thursdays to accept your gifts, the 22-minute podcast for inspiring your most creative life.